Investing Simplified is brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisory firm. Price Financial Group has been doing estate planning since 1970 and investment and retirement planning since 1975. Individual situations may vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Investing Simplified is the longest-running live financial program with a certified financial planner, estate planning attorney, and a certified public accountant to answer your questions for free. Got a tough estate, tax, or financial problem keeping you up at night? You can call the show right now at 503-222-9700. That's 503-222-9700. Long distance and podcast listeners can call toll free at 800-344-5836. Coming to you live from Portland, Oregon, and broadcast on affiliated stations throughout the Pacific Northwest. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Bo Caldwell.
We do Investing Simplified.
Welcome into Investing Simplified. However you're listening today, thank you for making us a part of your day. We really do appreciate you listening, tuning in, subscribing to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, or Google Play, as well as listening on InvestingSimplifiedRadio.com. We are going through some changes as we bring Matt May on to the firm here as our CIO. So at Price Financial Group, we've upgraded our logo or branding a little bit. We are upgrading our website. So bear with us as our website experiences some technical difficulties with some of our links are a little bit broken. But I wanted to remind folks, we do offer free complimentary consultations here at the office, over the phone, over Zoom, whatever makes the most sense for you and your comfort level. We do sanitize after each client. We do have masks in the office to make sure that everyone who comes in is safe and comfortable. We also are happy to do that over Zoom or anything like that. And there is never an obligation, never any sort of cost to do those checks for you. If you want to meet with myself, with Matt, with a member of our team, we are happy to do that. We do have locations as well across town, places where we can meet with you at that's convenient for you. Our main hub here where I am talking to you from today is out here in Beaverton, technically Bethany area off of Cornell and 26, but we have a nice office space down in Tigard off of 217 and I-5. We have a great space over by Clackamas Town Center, as well as the ability to meet you in the Vancouver area as well if you'd like to stay on that side of the river. So if that's something that's interesting to you, you'd like to get together, please give us a call, 503-253-3000. Now, you know, with the obligatory sales pitch out of the way of getting people to call, I really do appreciate you listening today. And I know that this week, you know, we had the first presidential election, and I do, you know, try to stay away as much as I can from political commentary here on the radio because, you know, in this time of, you know, of political upheaval, of change and everything that's going on, most folks have their own feelings and their own feelings of how they're going to vote and how they want to, you know, feel about the different candidates and different things like that. My job is not to try and influence you on which way to vote. That's none of my business, how you're going to vote or how you feel politically. My job is to give you the information so that you can use it no matter what happens. Because when we sit down and think about, you know, trying to project the presidential election, when we try to project what's going to happen in any sort of election or any sort of political arena, I think we can all be honest with ourselves, be intellectually honest, that we don't have a whole lot of control over what the folks in Washington do. What we do have control over, though, is how we react to what happens in Washington. And what I've come across a lot of my clients have had questions about, and really what folks are wondering about as we approach the election. You've noticed probably over the last couple of weeks that the market has been pretty volatile, up, down, up, down, up, down. It seems one thing comes out of the Federal Open Market Committee and the market moves up and then moves down. The president speaks and the market moves up and then moves down. The former vice president speaks, the market moves up and moves down. There's really no rhyme or reason to how it moves emotionally, except to say that traditionally, historically, September and October tend to be pretty volatile and tend to be, when you look at the Dow and when you look at the overall market, they tend to be the poorest performing months on average. Now, that doesn't mean that I think it's going to go down tomorrow or that we're going to go down going into the election, I just think that we're going to be pretty bumpy. And I think that looking at, you know, as of today, as of, you know, this week, as of right now, where we're looking at things, I wanted to touch on a couple of points that people have asked about and how we are looking on an outlook basis from what's going to happen when we get a president-elect, which, you know, just so you know, that doesn't mean that I'm saying we're going to get, you know, a new president. The president-elect means after the voting is done, it's all counted and tabulated, we know who's going to be the president in 2021. And I have told you and said before, and I continue to say it because it's true, we give far too much credit and far too much blame to whoever is in the White House currently, right? We're always giving too much credit and or blame to those folks because they really don't affect as much as we think. Now, they have agendas. They have, you know, plans. They have what they're going to do if they become president or what they say they're going to do. And I think we saw pretty clearly what President Trump said he was going to do and a lot of the repercussions of that since 2016 in the markets. And so I think most folks are pretty comfortable thinking about what happens in the market or what they think is going to happen in the market going forward if the president is reelected. I want to tell you that I think I am bullish personally on the market long term, no matter who's elected, you know, this election cycle, because the market likes clarity. It doesn't like to not know. It doesn't like to not know what's happening. It doesn't like to not know, you know, where things are going to go. It likes to have clarity. And so I think no matter which man takes the presidency this November, I am bullish on stocks in the stock market long term. Now, that's bullish. That doesn't mean I'm saying go all for it. But personally, I think that it will be good for the market to have some clarity. I wanted to kind of touch on a couple of things that people have been wondering about, though, from the perspective of if Joe Biden gets elected this year, and which is a possibility. And right now, looking at the odds, that's where the polls are going. And that's where a lot of economists that, you know, that I follow and that we talk to are seeing it happen. And that could be, they could be wrong. Nobody really knows. But in the case that he does, that Joe Biden does take the election, but the maybe let's say the GOP keeps the Senate seats, right? There is, I don't think that if that happens, that there's going to be any tax raises. I just don't think that any sweeping legislation gets done. Similarly, if President Trump wins re-election and the Democrats take control of the Senate based on voting, then I don't think a whole lot of sweeping legislation gets done. Personally, from my perspective, as a market, you know, watcher, as we're looking at what that means for your money, I think that either one of those situations is the best from a stock market perspective. Again, not going into any other political aspects of it, just from a stock market performance perspective. If we have one party in control of the White House and one party in control of Congress as a majority, that tends to be the best for the market because the market, again, likes status quo. It likes clarity. It likes to know there aren't big things coming. But let's say if Biden wins and the Democrats take the Senate, then probably some of the tax plans that the Biden-Harris ticket are talking about running are going to happen, right? So they're going to talk, and you've heard a lot of noise about tax hikes, right? They're going to raise taxes and it's just going to drive us into a recession or a depression. I really don't think that that is going to happen. A lot of the things that they've talked about from Social Security payroll tax and the big, you know, the big things they have going on with a long-term capital gains tax, getting rid of the step-up basis at death. These are big sweeping things that I think will get a lot of pushback from moderate Democrats as well as from Republicans because raising taxes, nobody really likes, in all honesty. So we're going to step away from those kind of options, but I want to talk about the two things that I think are relatively plausible were the Biden-Harris ticket to win the presidency and the Senate to turn blue. And again, I don't know that that's going to happen. I'm not campaigning for that to happen. I'm just preparing if that happens. How are we going to be affected, you and I, folks out there? How are we going to be affected if that happens? They're talking about raising the top income tax rate from regular income back up to 39.6% from 37%. I want to talk about that. That's a 2% hike, which seems crazy, right? It seems crazy that we're really worried about it because it's really not that hard. That's where the rate was under President Clinton. That's where the top tax rate was under President Obama in his second term. And we didn't have a recession just because the top income earners had to pay a little bit more tax, right? I think that really isn't going to affect most of us anyway, but I don't think that's a terrible thing for the economy, again, for the market, if that tax rate happens. The other one that's been, gotten a lot of play is raising the corporate tax rate, right? So there's been a lot of talk, and I think it's right, that the tax cuts that President Trump has put into place, the administration put into place a few years ago, cutting taxes on corporations, helped the stock market. Did it help the economy? Did it help, you know, regular people? You know, that's for economists who are smarter than I to argue. But the market, which is what I'm focused on for my clients when we're talking about investing wise, did well if we raise, when the rates got lowered on the capital, you know, the corporations having to pay a lower tax rate. So I know that we'd like it to stay at 21% because that's great for the market and any corporations would like it to stay there. But did we really think that it was going to stay there forever? And if you did, I think that you were putting your head in the sand. I mean, for the majority of, you know, time, the corporate tax rate has been higher. I mean, we had from the early 90s when President Clinton took office to, you know, what, late 2017 before President Trump lowered it, the highest corporate tax rate was actually at 35%. So I don't think that, you know, I don't think that they, it's going to really drastically affect the market to go back to what we were doing just a couple of years ago when the market was still running hot, right? We were coming out of that recession. We were getting better. The market was growing. And just because corporate tax rates were higher, I don't think that that's, you know, I don't think that that's really a thing that we need to worry about from a market perspective. I think that kind of just takes us back. It kind of goes back in between where we were 4 or 5 years ago and where we are now from a corporate tax rate perspective. Now, do I know that that means that the market's not going to go crazy because there's a higher tax rate? No. But I think that, you know, the key with looking at what these, you know, items that the ticket is talking about, what they're trying to do from a perspective of how we're going to affect taxes, I think those are the two reasonable, you know, conditions that they have on their ticket that might get passed with a simple majority if they are able to take the Senate. Again, the caveat there being, if the Democrats do not take control of the Senate, which is entirely possible as well, then I don't think a whole lot of tax raises happen, because I don't think that, even though the president thinks that they get to do things just because they're the president, you have to have the Senate, you have to have the House on board for passing those tax hikes and those laws, right? And so if Joe Biden wins the presidency and the House remains in Democratic hands, sure, they'll try to pass those tax raises, but I don't think it'll get through the Senate if the Republicans retain control. If they don't, which could happen too, and a lot of people are worried about what's going to happen, doom and gloom, if this happens, folks, presidents come and presidents go. And the stock market continues to plow on. This great country continues to plow on. So, my biggest concern for you is control what you can control. And I know I've said this before, and I will continue to say it again and again. Control what you can control, because everything else is out of our hands. We can only control how we react to our current reality with the market, with taxes, and how we're doing our planning. And what we try to do as a firm is make sure our clients are set up that way. That's what we try to do on this radio program, is get you the information so you can be prepared for whatever happens, because you and I both know we are not in control of what happens in Washington. We can make our voices heard by, you know, donating to the party that you support, by donating to candidates that you support, by going out and voting, making sure that your voice is heard at the highest level. But other than that, we need to react to the policies that come down. And so we need to be prepared to do so. So the thing I would tell you, if you're worried about the presidency changing hands, Congress possibly changing hands, and tax rates going through the roof, I think that the big taxes that will actually be done that I think are plausible to have happen is that highest income rate, regular income, to go back up to 39.6%, and then the corporate tax rate to go up to 28%. There's a whole bunch of other stuff that goes in there from an accounting standpoint and tax rates they're talking about on corporations. But I think that to get anything drastically done, they're going to need more than a simple majority. And there's a lot of moderate Democrats who won't vote for that. So I think really, in reality, we need to be prepared for possibly slightly higher tax rates. But that doesn't affect you unless you're in that highest tax bracket. And if you're looking at the market perspective, I really don't think it's going to have a strong negative impact on the market. I think that we need to be prepared to hold on for the long term. And again, I reiterate, no matter who wins the presidency this fall, I remain bullish on stocks, right? I think the stock market is set to go higher once we know who the president is. That's the big key. All right, that's my soapbox here to start the day. We're going to be right back after this break, and Matt's going to come in here. We're going to talk some basics of investing in different pieces. Taylor Cattell is in for Cover Your Assets a little later on, and then I'll be back to close it up with you and send you on your way. Thanks for listening to Investing Simplified.
Are you concerned about your retirement income? Do you really understand how your Social Security benefits work? Price Financial Group Wealth Management has helped many seniors in Oregon and Washington maximize their Social Security benefits at retirement through using their Social Security seminar on demand. Now you can watch this valuable information in the comfort of your home by just going to www.pfgwm.com and click on the free Social Security kit. If you are serious about your retirement planning, you cannot afford to miss this opportunity. After all, you have invested your hard-earned dollars into Social Security all your working years. So shouldn't you get the maximum return you can get from those dollars? The future can be scary, and without a plan, it can be even scarier, especially when facing the unknown. What you don't know can hurt you. Get your free Social Security kit at pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
And welcome back to Investing Simplified. As promised, in studio with me now is Matt May, CIO, Chief Investment Officer.
How you doing, Bo?
How's it going, Matt? I'm doing well. And folks, I think we were talking in the break, we wanted to spend some time going over a couple of questions that we get a lot in our industry because we use jargon interchangeably. You know, when we talk about funds and people hear about funds, so we'll talk about mutual funds and ETFs, you know, dividends, interest, all these different things, and we use them so quickly. And when you talk to an advisor, whether that's talking to Matt or myself, but when you talk to someone who's in the industry, they tend to blow right past it because they assume you know the difference. But there is actually a big difference between a mutual fund and an ETF, and there is a big difference between receiving income, whether that's interest income or dividends, right, Matt? I mean, this big problems can come up if people don't know the difference.
Certainly. Of course, it depends on what type of accounts they're in, but we would assume for this part of the conversation that we're talking about a taxable account. Most people would have either an individual account or a joint account. Occasionally, you might have a trust account,
right,
but these would be investments held inside those types of accounts. So the difference between an ETF and a mutual fund, I think they are very similar, but they do have differences. So they're not the same. I would say looking at an ETF in a taxable account, like a joint account or an individual account,
sure,
they are much more tax efficient. I would say that because if the mutual fund counterpart, if you own a mutual fund, there are circumstances that exist that a mutual fund would have a capital gain distribution. So I'll walk through that. A mutual fund is an actively managed or passive fund, mutual fund, that owns a bunch of different investments for the index that it's a part of. Could be multiple indexes, but there's a management team that's managing that money. And if some part of the year they had a position that they needed to sell or wanted to sell, let's say going back to February, March, there's a big dash of money out of the markets. And so people are selling their mutual funds. And the fund manager has to come up with that liquidity, that cash,
right,
to send to the person that sold their fund. And they have to sell stuff usually in that instance. So if they have to sell investments inside that mutual fund, sometimes they would sell investments that are up in value, and that created a cap gain. And even if you didn't sell your mutual fund, let's say you were one of the other fund holders that just didn't sell during that time period, but the mutual fund managers had to sell something at a gain, they have to, by law, pass those gains on to the investment, the mutual fund holders that year. So even if you didn't sell anything, you could possibly see a cap gain or a capital gain distribution to you. Generally, that happens in December.
So, right. So it's appropriate. We're talking about it now because you may have capital gains. And folks have asked about that. Hey, I got a 1099 about gains I had, but we didn't sell anything. I bought this, you know, this mutual fund and held on to it. I, you know, that, and now I don't pay taxes on it, but then when I sell it, do I pay taxes again? And the answer is no, right? So, you know, you're going to, it increases your cost basis, but it can prove to be, you know, hindering to you if you don't know that those capital gains are coming, you know, before you get them, and then you sell that fund or you don't sell that fund. And you mentioned a situation like February, but it could also happen if somebody, if those, that mutual fund, maybe they bought Tesla at $300, it went to the moon, split, and it went up again, and they decided, hey, we're going to sell out of that Tesla. Even if you're not making that decision, that's part of that actively managed fund, right?
Exactly. And that's one of the key differences between mutual funds and ETFs, or ETF stands for exchange traded fund. So I would call that the counterpart in owning a fund when we talk about funds. So for a tax perspective on an exchange traded fund, it works differently. There, it may be actively managed, it may be passively managed, but you actually, you, the owner, have to sell it to realize a gain. And when I say realize, there's a difference. Realized gains means you bought an investment, it went up in value, you sold it, and that's what's called realizing gains.
Right.
That's the way that you're going to see a cap gain on an ETF. There's no surprise towards the end of the year. Of taking a moment, with mutual funds, we get generally around, I've already had a couple fund families send me them, but we usually see them in October, maybe first half of November. We get a whole bunch. Hey, you own this fund, and this fund is going to have a 3.5% estimated cap gain distribution. And you can game the system a little bit. If you own that fund, then you know that it's going to have an 8% cap gain distribution. I mean, you, the investor, if you own that fund, you're going to have to pay taxes on that, whether you sold it or not, if they're distributing that cap gain to you. That's kind of the disadvantage of a mutual fund. Like Bo mentioned, it does increase your cost basis. So when you go to sell it at a future time, you don't owe as much on that particular time. If it's worth more, it raises your cost basis, so your tax bill then is a little bit lower. But I will digress even a little bit further as far as the tax inefficiencies. I'll go back to 2018. 2018 was a down year in the S&P. The account values that we saw pretty much largely across the board. Right. I think it was one of the biggest years as far as just all assets, the majority of assets across the board went down, bonds, stocks, everything. So if you owned these mutual funds, even if you did not sell them, they were down in value. And at the end of the year, they also distributed cap gains to you. You're down in value and you got a cap gain that you have to pay taxes on. So that situation can exist. So on the other side of the spectrum is the ETF. If you're down in value, yeah, that's never great. But at least in that instance, 2018, no cap gain being passed along to you. You could actually, on the flip side, you could sell it for a cap loss and use that, what we call that tax loss harvesting, where you're selling an investment at a loss to then get a write-off for that potentially.
Yeah, to offset some other gains. Yeah, the other big difference, and you mentioned the tax efficiency of it, you know, the other big difference is from a pricing standpoint, right? So when you have a mutual fund, it prices at the end of the day because it's priced at what's called net asset value. And you'll see that term abbreviated as NAV or NAV. And you may hear investment advisors talk about NAV or at NAV. And so what net asset value is they aggregate the overall value of all those companies or all those bonds, if it's a bond fund, in that mutual fund and tell you, okay, your shares are worth this many dollars at the end of the day. Like Matt said, you don't recognize gains in an ETF until you actually sell. And that's because the holdings in that ETF aren't changing during the day, right? So during the day, the ETF may trade at a price higher than the net asset value or lower than the net asset value. So if you had an ETF, just for an example, that is tracking the S&P 500, just so we can stick with the S&P 500, that ETF is SPY. That's a pretty popular ETF. So that ETF is not going to match up price-wise all the time with what the S&P 500 actually is. The index is moving. It's not going to match up exactly because there are people buying and selling that ETF during the day. And so it may trade at a higher price or a lower price. Now that's SPY is pretty close, which is why it's a super liquid ETF. It tends to trade pretty close to net asset value, but it could be higher or lower. And so when Matt mentioned the tax efficiency, unless something is subbed in or out of the S&P 500, that SPY ETF as a passively traded ETF is not changing things inside of it, so you're not going to get hit with a surprise capital gain or capital loss, like you mentioned.
Absolutely. And then one other distinction, although it is a little bit of a small distinction, ETFs generally price during market hours.
Yep.
Right. Versus a mutual fund, it on our time, I think it happens around 6 p.m. if
usually.
I remember. Yeah, yeah. 6 p.m.-ish, 7 yeah. p.m.-ish. So, you know, a lot of people look at the markets like, oh my gosh, the market's up 3%, and then they own a bunch of mutual funds. It's like, oh, my account really isn't up today. Well, you won't really know it until if you check that night or possibly the next morning. It's always usually a day behind. Whereas ETFs, if you have a live pricing platform, you in the market's up 3% and you own ETFs, those will generally have those prices up or down built in.
That's an important distinction. Yeah, absolutely. Especially if you're in those, you know, managed ETFs, or managed ETFs, and look at me, I'm putting them all together. The managed mutual funds that we talk about, actively managed funds. When you're in a actively managed mutual fund, and even if it is benchmarked against a certain index, so you're watching the overall market and you're watching to see how it moves, you won't see how it moves till the end of the day, as opposed to if you own Johnson & Johnson stock, you know what that price is all throughout the day. If Correct. You own that SPY, that S&P 500 equivalent, you know, tracking ETF, you know during the day what the price is of that, and you'll know at the end of the market day.
Right. And we did talk about the ETFs, that what Bo mentioned, that it can trade above or below net asset value, or NAV, NAV. That is called tracking error. And that's one of the things, if you own an ETF, that you're looking for, something that has a very low tracking error compared to the index that it's tracking.
Right.
You know, if you want to own emerging markets or S&P 500, large right. Growth, small value, there's a bunch of different indexes, but you want to try and own something that has the lowest tracking error right. and also the lowest fee.
Right, because both of those are going to be contributing to whether or not you go exactly as the market does. And we keep mentioning pricing, and that's due to when you can purchase, when you can buy or sell ETFs or mutual funds. That's the other difference, right? You heard in the name, it's an ETF, or exchange traded fund, which means that it can be traded on an exchange. So what that means is, at any point during the day when the market is open, you can buy or sell that ETF. Whereas with a mutual fund, you can only buy or sell that once a day. And that happens, like Matt said, at the end of the market day. So if you put an order in to buy, you know, let's say they're working with you, Matt, or they talk to you and they said, hey, I want to buy that JP Morgan Emerging Markets fund that you talked about, right? So they're going to buy that fund, but they go to put the order in at 10 a.m. and they call you back an hour later. Why isn't that fund bought? Why isn't it bought, Matt?
Because we won't know what price you get on that purchase until the actively managed fund goes through all of those holdings to find out what your actual NAV purchase price is. And that happens on generally around 6 p.m.-ish, 7 p.m.-ish hour time.
Right. So, yeah, so that's key when you're buying a fund. And this is true if you're doing it through an advisor like one of us, or you're buying your mutual fund on Charles Schwab or on Robinhood or wherever. If you're buying a mutual fund, you need to be aware that you can only buy it once during the day. And even if you think you're timing the market by buying it, you know, the market opens down and you think it's going to go up, so I want to buy it now. If by the end of the day the market's up, you buy it at that up higher price.
It always goes by the end of the day pricing.
Yeah, so that's a big thing to pay attention to when you're looking at mutual funds or ETFs. And we're not, you know, we're agnostic, you know, generally speaking, on mutual funds versus ETFs. We like ETFs and mutual funds both. We just like to have the best return for the risk that we're taking for our clients, right?
Absolutely. And it really does depend on the market conditions to determine what is better. It really does depend on a straight upwards moving market, like we saw the large part of 2014 through part of 2018, most of 2018. It was just pretty much straight up. Right. It was tough to make a case to own actively managed mutual funds, which were lagging the index to a large degree. And, you know, there was no real volatility to right. speak of. 2017 was one of the lowest volatility years
right,
ever.
Right.
And mutual funds with those actively managed teams, they need some volatility because they're not fully invested. And what I mean is, generally speaking, a mutual fund is going to have a cash component inside it. Call it 3%, 4%, 5%, sometimes 10 or more, depending on the mandate of that mutual fund.
Right.
It'll say in the prospectus, like, hey, we can hold up to this much cash. Or
and they have to have a certain amount available for redemptions, right?
Correct.
So that's the other difference. When you're selling on those funds, they have to be ready for a redemption. When you sell your mutual fund, you're redeeming shares of that fund. When I sell my ETF, there has to be a buyer on the other side, and I'm selling it to somebody like Matt, who's buying that ETF. So right. That's a big difference in terms of when you're selling them, right? So, but yeah, so continue. So that actively managed funds, sorry, I keep interrupting you. I'm just the worst.
Oh, no sweat.
But so the actively managed mutual funds, when volatility is higher, are going to, generally speaking, like you said, we're not saying that's the time to go into any specific fund, but generally speaking, that's where you'll see the value in them.
A good mutual fund management team will have a little bit of a cash cushion, which means they'll have dry powder to buy if the market goes down. And then if they think the market is expensive on the high side, they'll, you know, trim back on those positions. Generally, over a longer period of time, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, that creates a bit of a separation in a good fund. I will say, there are a lot, probably 80% or more of the actively managed mutual funds do not keep pace with the index over time.
Right.
We focus on the ones that do, and then also have a strategy if they're not. We'll put them on a review process, and sometimes 3 or 6 months later, we might have to eject them from our lineup.
Right.
It's sad when that happens.
You never like to see a trusted friend go.
Right. And going back to a prior conversation, going back to Bob Dahl, who said, I only have to be right 60% of the time to make people a large amount of money. I would say last year was, over the last 2 or 3 years, we have probably a track record, something like 80% success, which is pretty solid. I'm happy about that part, but we're always keeping an eye on those actively managed funds to make sure that they're quality. Right?
Yeah, they got to add the value, right? If they're not earning their keep, then you need to eject them. Just like if your advisor's not earning their keep, or you'd like to review whether you think they're earning their keep, give us a call, 503-253-3000. Matt and I, a member of our team, we'd love to sit down with you, go over what you're doing. If you want some more details on ETFs, mutual funds, any of those different things and how they work, we would love to hear from you. We'd love to sit down with you. As always, there is no obligation for those consultations. We're happy to tell you what we think about what you're doing, what we would do if we were the managers for you, and how we might be able to help. But there's no point in time where we will tell you yet, you got to sign up or we won't let you leave. It's not it's not a used car lot here, folks. But we appreciate you listening.
Those are the worst.
We're going to be back, and we're going to take a break here, and then we're going to be back. Taylor Cattell's in for Cover Your Assets, which we're really excited to have her back. But if you have a question that's been keeping you up at night, please remember, send it to askbo@pfgwm.com or visit investingsimplifiedradio.com if you'd like to leave the question there. Thank you so much. We'll be right back with Investing Simplified.
Legal matters are never easy, but they are especially difficult when they involve the most important people and aspects of your life. This is Taylor Cattell, founding partner of KG Law Group. It's important to have an attorney who cares about your unique circumstances and knows how to get the outcome that is best for you. At KG Law Group, we specialize in estate planning and family law, including wills, trusts, powers of attorney, guardianship, and divorce. At KG Law Group, we provide both expertise and compassion as we guide you through the complex legal landscape. We balance knowledge of the law with exemplary client service. Whether you're reacting to a crisis or planning for the future, we are here to help. If you need legal advice, give us a call today and schedule a consultation at 503-878-8948. That's 878-8948. Or visit us online at kglawgroup.com. That's kglawgroup.com, serving Oregon and Southwest Washington. KG Law Group, your family, your legacy.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
And welcome back to Investing Simplified. As promised, joining us in studio right now is Taylor Cattell with the KG Law Group. Hello, Taylor.
Hello, Bo, and hello, everyone.
And I know people are excited because it's now time to cover your assets, right? And so, Taylor, we were talking a little bit in the break, about situations, you know, that have come up recently, for at least in my practice, and I know in yours, about folks that have aging parents. Mm-hmm. And they know, you know, maybe they own some property back, in the Midwest, or mm-hmm. there was a farming community, you know, anything like that. But their folks have maybe said, you know, not a whole lot about right. what's the plan for their estate? And it, you know, that's can be an awkward question, right?
It absolutely can be. And it's a really complex dynamic when you want to talk to somebody about their estate planning, particularly when you might be a recipient, potentially, hopefully, maybe not, of their estate. And so I think it's a really important question, though, because we cover a lot of what I consider the hard topics here, right? What are the tax consequences? What are the strategies for financial investing? And those are really, really helpful and important and critical pieces. But at the end of the day, a lot of actions are governed not by tax consequences, but by fear or insecurity or other emotional drivers. And I'm sure you see this in your practice where you got people calling and saying, sell, 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 the market's dropping. And part of your job is to bring the rationality of, no, no, you're fine. This is how we've plan for this. And and that happens in my practice too, although on a probably less frequent basis.
Well, less like sell, sell, sell right now.
Right.
But it's also awkward, right? I mean, that's one of the things that you're taught from a very young age. And I'm having a bit of deja vu because I think we've had this conversation, but maybe not, you know, recently, but about the weird questions, you know, it's impolite, right? You're taught from a very young age that it's impolite to talk to people about money. You shouldn't ask your parents about money. Don't talk to them about it. And I know it's sort of taboo, or it's, you know, to borrow a phrase from my mother, it's oogie for people to talk about those things. But those are conversations that you need to be having, not just from the tax perspective, like you said, but if you're looking at your own estate planning, right? If I'm looking at how I'm going to build out what I need to do when something happens to me, it's a good idea to have an idea about what, if anything, may be coming from, you know, my folks or, you know, someone like that. And I'm not talking about out of the woodwork, like, oh, hey, I had an aunt who passed away. I didn't know she had money and she left me money. Okay.
Right.
That's a nice windfall, although you're sad to lose your aunt, but you know, nice windfall. But when it's your folks.
When it's your folks or your siblings or, you know, there's a lot of misunderstanding that you have to somehow consent to be named in somebody's documents. You don't. You don't have to know. Vice versa, you don't have to tell anybody who you name in your estate planning documents. But that doesn't mean you should. You know, you should have a conversation because the estate planning documents, they're written by, hopefully, an attorney. Yeah, and that attorney is not there. What the point from when I say this to my clients, my job is to make the general idea of what you want legally enforceable. It's the bones. It's the skeleton. It's not the meat on the bones. It's not the content. So who should be the guardian of your children? Naming a specific person so that they can have a certain right if that comes to pass is very different than how should someone raise your children, That's not something that's going to be in the legal documents. That's not something I can convey, but that's a conversation that worst case scenario needs to be had to communicate the values and the things that are important to you. Similarly, when it comes to, and I'm just seeing this a lot with folks, and I'm going to pause here to say, the different generational expectations about talking about money are significant.
Sure.
So especially the folks who are in their 80s, 90s now, they don't talk about money.
Right?
That is not something that's not even a, and to be respectful in how you approach this is really important because it's understanding that every generation has its own way of dealing with money and talking about money. And you're at, from an estate planning perspective, the goal is not how much do you have?
Right.
The goal is not what am I going to get? The goal is not, are you going to support yourself or are you going to be on my shoulders? Or, you know, those are the really uncomfortable, especially for the current aging out generation. Mm-hmm. The questions are more, do you have an estate plan? How can I carry out the wishes that you want of me if you're going to depend on me? And a lot of folks know. Now, they might not know in an official sense, but they would know in an emotional expectation. If my grandma's calling me because the garage door broke and needs to be fixed, if my grandma's calling me because she can't read this fine print on this thing and she wants me to interpret it, you know when you're starting to be called upon that there's going to be an expectation that you're going to step into to someone's shoes. If there are five different siblings and one of them lives closer to mom or dad, that person tends to be in the hot seat. And it may or may not be the person who is going to be trusted financially. It may be that that's the person who calls the handyman and the money is going to be managed by someone else. But those are still a lot of families. There, most people know who's going to be the one to step up the plate, who's going to be the one to fight about it. Grief does pretty funny things to people. So just because you have this inclination doesn't mean that's how it's going to come to pass. But while someone is alive and has capacity, it is an opportunity not to be missed to say, what do you want? What's important to you? Oh, and by the way, is that legally in writing?
Right. And have you, when was the last time you reviewed it? Right. And the thing that jumps out to me, what you just mentioned, just because of what we've recently experienced around here with these, you know, these fires and with evacuations, and you said that the thing you said was about capacity, but any of these folks that have been doing just fine and had that, you know, had capacity, but maybe they're getting a little bit older, you're aging out, but then they don't have plans on moving to maybe a retirement community. They've been, especially those folks that live out in those outskirts, you know, I bring up Estacada specifically because that was a town that was evacuated and thankfully, thank God was saved by the, you know, the brave men and women, the firefighters. But, you know, if you had a property out there and you had all your things and, hey, I'm loading everything up, has that all been allocated? And then once now the conversation may be starting with mom or dad, hey, we're thinking about, you know, moving you here. But then if you don't know what mom or dad has, how they're set up, how everything's, you know, allocated to go, that's a much more difficult conversation, especially with your siblings, right? Or, you know, like you said, grief can do awful things. Yeah. So it's good to know what that is. The, the other thing that really spoke to me, what you just said, was it's not about what am I getting? What do I get?
Right.
Right. That seems to me maybe that's a better approach, is to, is everything taken care of? How can I help?
Yeah, exactly. Right? How can I support you? What do I need to know to carry out your wishes? If it's not me, who? Who do you need to have that conversation with? And approaching it very much with that open heart, open mind. It goes a long way to say, I'm not out for my own self-interest. I just want to make sure you're taken care of. And if that conversation isn't with me, who should that conversation be with? Can I help facilitate that? Is that something that you want all of us to participate in? If not, is it my big brother? Because it's not me, that's fine, right? As long as you have something, something in place, a plan of any kind, and that let's make sure that's that the next steps of, is it updated? Is it legally enforceable? That those are in place, even if you don't know the content of it. And even if you know the content of the plan, you don't know if, you know, everything goes equally, but you don't know what everything is.
Yeah.
Or it doesn't go equally, but again, you don't know all the numbers. Those things fluctuate anyway. So I think the place that some folks get hung up is on the dollars.
Yeah.
And on the location of things. I want to know where all your accounts are. That's very threatening for a lot of folks.
Sure.
But if it's just, here's what I want, either here's where I want to live, like you said, having the more difficult conversation of, if I can't stay in my house because it burns down.
Right.
Or if I can't stay in my house because I fall, let's just have a plan in place so that you're not somewhere you don't want to be.
Right. And it doesn't come as a surprise, especially as they start, because, you know, statistically, the older we get, the more likely we are to have this cognitive decline, right?
You
know, just so you have that cognitive decline. And if you haven't had that conversation with mom or dad until they've started maybe no longer even being who they were before,
right?
Then you don't know what that is. And you mentioned, you know, where's everything? How's everything allocated? That's not, that is, I felt very threatened. You just asking me.
Where right. right.
But yeah, you have the conversations about just making sure that it is. You have a plan. Do you have a plan? Do you need any of my help? And a lot of people will know, right? To a certain extent, hey, you know, like I mentioned, if you've got a farm that's been in the family for generations or this or that or the other thing, but you want to make sure that you are not, you know, caught off guard by that, right?
Right. And that's a good, a very good point, because often there are family assets that have been, and this just has come up in my practice frequently recently for whatever reason. Things come in waves that have no rhyme or reason, but a family trust that was established back in the 90s with the cabin up near Mount Hood or whatever it is. And then I've got the person in my office who's, you know, in their 40s saying, yeah, I'm going to get some interest in a family trust, and I don't really know who the trustee is, what my rights are. I just know that we go up there every year and have my whole life. And ask for a copy of that document, right? That doesn't, you don't have to say what's it worth, what are my rights. Again, it's just having some, so if you know that you are a beneficiary or and this is enforceable by Oregon law, if you're a qualified beneficiary, which is a very specific defined term, then you have a right to a copy of the trust instrument and to enough information about the trust to protect your interest. That varies, right?
Sure.
And there's more things there. And I'm not saying you just start putting your demands in writing, and that's a good way to get cut out of things when there's often a lot of discretion still, and you don't want to go sideways with a trustee. But a carefully crafted question about just how does this whole process work? And that is really important to know, because you otherwise may not understand, and don't assume that somebody's just going to tell you. I think that's the thing that surprises folks more often, is they just assume, well, when it's important, I'll know. That may or may not be true, but you don't know who that trustee is. And that trustee might be some corporate Nevada trustee or somebody who has set up an old CPA, and they may or may not be as forthcoming as they're even legally obligated to be. So asking some questions, just having an idea of where things are, is really important for your own estate planning and for your own expectations too. But making sure that you're being thoughtful.
Right. You're not sending the message that, hey, when are you going to kick off, Mom?
Right. Exactly.
It's not
exactly
not looking for that windfall for Mom, because we all know you'd rather have your mom, right?
Right.
But the idea is, okay, well, when that happens, and then you don't want to be left to pick up the pieces, right? I mean, how many times have you come across those folks that, hey, Mom or Dad passes away and they're scrambling to find all the stuff, right? Pick up all the different things, and people don't know, but I've had a life insurance policy. That life insurance company is not going to call my kids. The beneficiary has to get in touch with the life insurance company.
And it's
not
like there's some central database of every asset somebody has. I get that question a lot too. Well, can't we just plug in the date of death and Social Security, or somebody's tracking all their assets everywhere? There's nothing like that. So you do have to have some basic knowledge. Again, you don't have to say how much is in it, but do you have accounts at 5 banks, 10 banks, 1 bank, 1 financial advisor?
Or is there a list of those things? Is there, if they've worked with, an advisor like myself, or they worked with, an attorney that planned everything out, they should have a basic list, right?
Plan.
Just say, hey, here's the things I don't need to know where those are, Mom. Do you have one of those?
If you have a list, if anything happens to you, do you have a special drawer? Do you have a combination to your safe?
Right.
Do you have keys to your safe deposit box? Right. How is somebody, you don't need it now, but if something were to happen, if your house is on fire, where do we go first to make sure that your most important stuff is taken care of, or your copies of your insurance policies there? It's just important to have that conversation. And I would say that the biggest barrier is not the conversation itself, it's starting the conversation.
Right.
And a couple examples. First off, use this radio show. Hey, Mom, I was listening to the radio and they were talking about how many people get caught off guard when they don't know how to plan, and how we might not know what you want. And it just made me think about you. And what do you think? When do you want to have that conversation? Do you want all of us to be a part of it? And just lead in. And then if they don't take you up on it, it's an uncomfortable subject. Follow up a couple weeks later and say, hey, by the way, we never really talked about that. Are you wanting to talk about that? And if they blatantly say no, there's only so much you can do.
Yeah.
But at least that you've done what you want to do and planted the seed. And don't be surprised if it comes out later, right? Months or years later, once upon a time you asked where I keep these, well, I'm ready to share that with you now.
Right. Well, once they start maybe feeling their mortality a little bit more, they may have that conversation, and to know that you're interested in it.
And especially after the loss of a spouse.
Right.
That's when I see a big shift in expectations and openness. Once the first of a married couple has passed, they realize that their default person isn't there, and their own mortality becomes a lot more real.
Yeah.
And on the flip side of that, if as you're listening to this, you're thinking, well, I'm that parent.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Think about what really is in your best interest. And you probably have some strong opinions about what you do and don't want. And if you don't take the opportunity to communicate those, then the people that you either want or don't want around are going to be making those decisions for you without the information to rely on. And so a lead-in might be, hey, I was listening to this radio show, and it made me really think. I haven't said some of this stuff out loud, and I'm telling you, or I'm going to put it in a letter, or I'm going to, you know, I've written a letter. If anything happens to me, open it here, right?
Right.
There's a lot of ways to, you don't have to be 100% transparent and 100% direct and 100% comfortable with these topics to at least offer some guidance on what it is that you would want.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So those are some good tips for, you know, having that conversation. I think the big takeaways for me, folks, are have the conversation, right? That's the number one, right? And don't be afraid of it. You know, make sure you're thinking about it, be measured about it. It's not about, you know, mom, when am I going to get the, you know, when that money that you're leaving me, but, you know, you could approach it from a, how can I help? Have you taken care of that? I think that's great. I listened to the radio. I heard this thing on the radio while I was driving.
Right.
Thought maybe, you know, we should talk about that. Just making sure you're all taken care of. If you need any of my help, let me know. You know, it's a real soft entry rather than where is everything.
Exactly. And also there's, I find that my biggest referral sources are my clients who have been through a bad experience.
Sure.
Right. And they're going, probate was awful. I had this happen and my brother came out of the woodworks and we all thought he was dead. And now he's claiming XYZ. Right. You all need an estate plan. And it's interesting how going through an experience, whether it's doing your own estate plan and going through the what ifs about your own life, or going through a probate or a trust administration and saying, oh, I didn't realize that that's how this worked. And that's how this process is set out to be. That can be another very important lead-in for communicating with the closest people in your life to say, I realize now that there's some implications here. I want to make sure when it comes to me or when it comes to you, because you might rely on me, that we're on the same page here. So I think doing the process yourself is another really important way of opening the door to others and saying, I didn't realize XYZ. And that doesn't mean you have to do the estate planning process necessarily. It could be that you've just lost a loved one in your life and you've just tangentially seen where that is. What's happened with that? That's another soft opening to say, hey, I heard this horror story about my friend's dad.
Yeah.
I want to make sure I'm not in the same position with you, mom. How can I help? What do you want?
Yeah. No, I like that. That makes a lot of sense. And if you have questions specifically about your situation or about, you know, your folks, you've had that conversation with your folks, if they want to give their folks your information, Taylor, where should their folks call or where should these people call when they need that help?
KG Law Group at 503-878-8948, or you can find us online at kglawgroup.com.
Perfect. And if you have any questions about your financial situation, or if you have questions for next week's, the week after, any of these episodes that we do where Taylor does these cover your asset segments, something that is applicable to you that you have come across, the caveat is she can't give you personalized legal advice. We can talk in generalities, but if there's a situation you've come across that you'd like to share, we'd love to hear about it. Send that to askbo@pfgwm.com. We'll be right back with more Investing Simplified.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Colson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Colson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercolson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercolson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Colson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
Welcome back here to the very end of our show here at Investing Simplified. I want to just touch base with you folks before we go. Remind you, give us a call, 503-253-3000 if you'd like to sit down, have a third party take a look at your current situation, tell you what we think with no obligation. I got to apologize as we get close to the buzzer here. We just get to talking, you know, Matt and I get to talking about things that excite us. Taylor and I get to talking about things that have happened in our practices, and we want to make sure we're bringing you the best content out there that we can. We want to make sure that we're still relevant to your situation. So remind you, if you have questions, send that to askbo@pfgwm.com or visit our website, pfgwm.com. We really appreciate you listening. I know it's tough times going on out there. I know there's a lot of things happening. 2020 has been quite a year so far, and I think it only will continue as we approach an election, as we approach, you know, maybe a second wave of COVID, as we approach all these different things. Know that we are here. We're going to keep coming to you and bringing you this content, and I really do appreciate you listening, you tuning in. I appreciate your thoughts. We appreciate your questions. We're going to be back next week with more exciting content, but if you'd like to be involved, send us an email, give us a call. Thank you so much for listening today. Thank you for tuning in. Be safe out there. Take care of one another. Be kind. Be safe. Be healthy. God bless you all. I appreciate you listening. This has been Investing Simplified.
Financial Group Wealth Management. Price Financial Group Wealth Management.
You can listen to past shows of Investing Simplified at gwm.com. This show was brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, Portland, Oregon, 97216, 503-253-3000, or 877-50-PRICE. Investing Simplified is a registered trademark owned by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated.